Check podcasts.
The Center for Ocean Applied Sustainable Technologies, or COAST, welcomes you to COAST Talks, showcasing the people, ideas, businesses, and communities driving innovation in Pacific Canada's sustainable blue economy. Brought to you by the South Island Prosperity Partnership.
Welcome to the COAST Talks podcast, a deep dive into the innovations driving BC's blue economy. My name is Jason Goldsworthy and I'm the Executive Director of COAST, the Centre for Ocean Applied Sustainable Technologies. We are Pacific Canada's hub for the blue economy and we support our members to research, start up and scale sustainable ocean innovation. On today's episode, we are chatting with Swordfish Energy, a company leading the way with disruptive underwater turbines for clean, reliable power. And to join me today from Swordfish Energy, I'm actually very excited to include two guests. Welcome to Dawn Beattie, the Chief Technology Officer and Founder, as well as Patrick Marshall, the Chief Executive Officer and Co-Founder of Swordfish Energy. Welcome, Dawn and Patrick. Thank you. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Jason.
This is great.
Dawn, I'm going to start with you on a couple of questions. First of all, a little bit about Swordfish Energy. What does it do and what is the technology?
Well, simply put, it's a horizontal access turbine. So based on ebb and flow of tides or based on the flow of rivers, it causes the rotation of the turbine. The turbine then spins and creates energy. It's pretty simple, actually. The beauty of it, though, is that it uses wings instead of blades, and which makes it very, very safe for sea creatures. It's self-cleaning. It's semi-buoyant. There's all kinds of technical things that go with it, but the simplicity of it is simply that it's if the water moves, so does Swordfish, and power is generated.
You, as the co-founder and the chief technology officer, you came up with this concept. What was your experience that led you down this path?
I have a boating background, and because of that, I had a Sea Ray, a rather large Sea Ray yacht. That I got into based on my music background. Anyway, what I discovered is that having two giant gas-powered engines was extremely expensive, even back then in a number of years ago. So I came up with the idea of towing a turbine behind the boat and having it bypass the generators, with the theory of it saving me gas. So that's kind of where the idea started. From there, idea was introduced to some folks on the Isle of Man, one of them being the former CEO of a tidal energy company that was going on down on the Isle of Man in 2011. And when they saw the idea, they said, well, this is what we're going to do. And it's just evolved from there. So the last 5 years has been taking it from that boat concept, which was only about 6 feet long, to now a minimum of 9 feet up to 40 feet long.
Wow. It's incredible to hear some of the stories of our founders on these podcasts coming from that small, small application of it turning into something a lot larger. And it's a fantastic story. Tell us a little bit more about how it generates electricity. So you talked about how it works on the boat. How does it actually generate the electricity?
Within the nacelle or the body of the turbine, there's multiple small generators rather than one large generator that's accelerated by a gearing system, which is what most turbines have. Ours is multiple small generators with no gear system. So in our large unit, let's say a 1 megawatt unit, we would have as many as 20 small axial flux generators. So it's a different type of generator called an axial flux. And the way that works is very little resistance. So the turbine can power it, and they're all the nacelle itself is the gear. I guess that would be a good way to put it. And that creates the rotation of about a high ratio rotation of the smaller axial flux generators. The beauty of that is that if one generator fails in our turbine, it's no big deal. The generator will just continue to put out power. We could probably lose half our turbines and still service the needs of the client. Whereas if a turbine fail, a generator or a gear or any part of our wing style turbine or propeller style turbine fails, that's it. They're out of business until that gets fixed. So that's one of the very valuable components that we've got within Swordfish.
Yeah, and I mean, just from my background, I mean, that makes a lot of sense as well, because reliability and resilience in these sorts of systems is vitally important. So that adds you a little bit of almost redundancy in that case. Is that fair to say?
Yes. I think there's multiple redundancies actually within the system. So any kind of failure, we can calculate. So we could accumulate a bunch of small failures should they occur. Now, the odds of that failing is also pretty slim, simply because there's no resistance, there's no heat generated with the axial flux generator. We have what's called a Faraday cage. So we actually wrap our systems in copper, so there's no electromagnetic interference or emissions which can disrupt sea life. So it's a very ecologically and marine life friendly turbine. But we can accumulate failures and then go back during a nice weather day to do a repair, as opposed to having to do an emergency repair with a propeller style turbine. So that's one of the advantages, and the fact that it's semi-buoyant allows it to be brought to the surface, a quick repair, and then pulled back down onto its moorings to get back to work.
I'm going to talk a little bit about the eco-friendly nature of it, or how it protects or minimizes impact to the nature and the environment. But I just want to get a little bit on for the listeners around why this type of energy is actually beneficial, why tidal energy or river energy is beneficial compared to, say, some of the other types. Can you allude on some of that?
Absolutely. My favorite topic, actually. Not to badmouth the competition, but we're more than double the efficiency of wind. We're triple the efficiency of wind, double the efficiency of solar. And the reason for that is that wind and solar are just too unreliable. Whereas our turbine, it's the ebb and flow of the tides, which is, technically speaking, that's 19.2 hours a day that our turbines are just generally generating power. So, or if they're in a river, it's 24/7. So that kind of efficiency that is easily transported to storage, an energy storage system. And we're involved with several companies that have that type of capability. So it's not our development, but we provide either 19.2 hours or 24/7. With very dependable, reliable, and I think predictable. I mean, any fisherman can tell you that they can predict the tides 20 years from now. I think you can even buy annual books that'll say the tides at 4 p.m., September 28th, 2029, the tide will be this. So that kind of reliability, dependability, and predictability is something that make the accounting departments for an energy company like ours very happy.
Absolutely. You talked about fishermen being able to predict the tides. I'm not so sure they predict their catches, although they try and link it. But anyway, that's if you can do that for them too, that's another little benefit. But so I'll come back to the environment, because it is a bit of a concern, and then that's something that tidal energy and other ocean-based energies have struggled with. How does the Swordfish technology deal with environmental impacts and minimizing the impact it has and protects the fish habitats and stuff, or fish and fish life?
Well, I'll give you a word, turbidity. I'd only ever heard that word once in my life from my father, who was fixing my mother's dishwasher. So I found out what turbidity meant. But the next time I heard it was with a lady who I've been so fortunate to meet, Dr. Shannon Bard, She's got more credentials after her name than, you know, Einstein. And her specialty, though, is the environment. And early on, I guess maybe 2 years ago, a little more than two years ago, I started working with Shannon on the, you know, what are the issues that are of interest to people who are concerned about the environmental impact of underwater turbines. And so turbidity, of course, came up. And because Swordfish is very slow moving, so it moves with the tide directly. With that in mind, it's self-cleaning. So because there's no resistance, we've done all kinds of computer fluid dynamics testing, and there's no cavitation. So there's no bubbles coming off the back end, which are actually destructive. There's no turbulence. Water flows through and comes out the back end of the turbine, which means that we can stack multiple turbines together and in single file. For example, in the river, we could put several small turbines in single file, and the front turbine has no impact on the second or the third or the fourth turbine. So that sort of thing, that slow rotation, the self-cleaning, the non-resistive, has I can't speak for the fish as it's a calming effect, but if you look on our video, you'll notice that the fish that are in the tank that we used, which is a small little model in a small fish tank, that's in reality, that's what it is, but it's real. There's no digital trickery in it. It's the real thing, and those are real fish. They could care less. And we believe that we'll have that same environmental or marine animal friendliness when we can put it in BC waters.
So, talking about BC waters, I mean, what sort of scale and deployment? So, what do you need for a deployment location? What sort of scale are you looking at this at? As you develop this technology, where do you see it applied in the most cases?
I can certainly give you a strong answer to that, but I think Patrick has been closer to that from a technical perspective. Is that fair to ask you to lob that one over to Patrick?
Yeah,
that's a good segue. Patrick, join the discussion.
Sure. I mean, what's really interesting about Swordfish is Dorn has developed a suitcase size a device that could be used by defense industries for powering remote locations, right up on through our proof of concept, which is probably going to be in the area of 8 to 10 feet long. And I want to, just on a point that Dorn had made, ours is an impeller as opposed to a propeller. The propellers that you see conventionally in the ocean are basically a windmill that's dropped off the back of a barge, and they kind of have a chopping motion. Ours is a turning motion. So it doesn't have the same impact. And the other elements that Dorn has included to be environmentally malignant, what's the word? Not
environmentally friendly?
Friendly is good, but I mean, that sounds like greenwashing. but non-impact on the environment is he's developed a Swordfish with a Faraday cage. So it works at anti-fouling, so that it doesn't pick up on a lot. And the other part to this that really got me was the observation abilities. So there are, correct me in the terminology, Dorn, but basically fish face finders. So they can identify fish species. And so the observation deck that we're going to include on each device and also network across the region has the ability to not only monitor our maintenance requirements under secure basis, but we're looking at providing an observatory function not dissimilar to Ocean Networks Canada. But if we can see, if you could imagine 60 different locations up the Pacific coast, another 70 in the Arctic and another 50 in the Atlantic tied in a network observatory way, we're working with a company out of the UK on that. So that's part of the monitoring, part of the maintenance. But also from an environmental observation point of view, we want to be able to provide data back. So big data is a big part of this. And that's what I like about it. So a 10-foot diameter by, say, 18-foot long device would take a 20 by 30 piece of seabed. That's all we're looking for.
And in terms of what sort of power generation that would produce?
That's a megawatt.
A megawatt. And yeah, for the listeners that don't understand megawatts, what would that power in terms of homes?
Dolan?
I think the average number, and it varies whether you're getting statistics from Canada, U.S. or U.K., mm-hmm, but it's somewhere around 750 homes would be quite easily covering 1 megawatt.
From one turbine. That's fantastic. All right, I'm going to turn it over now that we've heard from Patrick. Let's we grilled Dawn early on. So you're the CEO of Swordfish. What's your experience and how did that lead you to Swordfish?
Well, I've spent the last 30 years as an economic developer on the Pacific Coast working for local government First Nations companies, and I've seen every kind of contraption proposed since 89. And so when I was presented with Swordfish as an opportunity, I had an immediate affinity with the device because I know, you know, our biggest concern on the Pacific, having worked on the Pacific North Coast Integrated Management Area Planning Process, which is a mouthful, but that was a marine spatial planning process that goes from Cape Mudjon Quadra up to Alaska and includes Haida Gwaii. We're very familiar and sensitive to impact on our ocean. And so when I saw the device and how it's packaged and got to meet Dorn, I was really impressed. So also, having worked with nations the last 4 years, I served as an election officer with a company called OneFeather.ca and doing elections across Canada, about 330 nations, Métis, Inuit, and First Nation, especially on the coast. I saw the application or the opportunity to eliminate the use of diesel. We have communities, we have industry, we have commerce, we have institutions that rely on diesel to power their coastal operations. And there's this kind of rush towards decarbonization to make 30-30. So I saw an instant opportunity. And so Dorn and his other co-founder, who's located in the UK, I pitched him on coming into the most complex regulatory environment on the planet, and, you know, proposing to them that I think we have a way through these complex processes to bring everybody together. Because as you know, Jason, if you open up a license in the ocean, you're bringing on 6-7 layers of government. And it's not just local government, there's regional government, there's provincial government, there's federal government, there's First Nation government, there's tribal governments, there's people with interests. And so we think through our experience with First Nations that we are going to be able to resolve some of these issues on rather a quick timeline.
So I'm going to come back to a couple of things. There's a lot, yeah, lot to discuss. You talked about, yes, it's a complex environment. I can attest that ocean energy is a complex technology. Why did you choose this technology to commit those efforts to as part of the decarbonization strategy?
There's two reasons. When you look at the design, and I encourage you to look at swordfish-energy.ca, you'll see a model of a replica that actually Dorn 3D printed. And I think that's a fish tank in his living room. Mind you, those tetramin we were talking about it earlier today are probably fifth generations from the ones that were caught in the film. But when you see it operate, you see that it's a gentle. Dorn comes from a rock and roll background. So, you know, what was the tagline or the hook that you used? Go with the flow.
I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Go with the flow. So the device goes with the flow. And yes, I think
it rolls with the flow.
Yeah. I saw in that a biomimetic design, which means his device mimics nature. And that, seeing that with the need on the coast for the elimination of diesel, got me really excited.
Can I make a quick comment on that?
Absolutely.
Okay. One of my favorite stories right here in BC is up in Haida Gwaii. And when I was doing my research a couple of years ago, I found an article where a community in the Haida Gwaii uses 10 million liters of diesel per year to power a population of about 5,000, is my understanding. That does not include the cost of all the diesel it takes to barge that diesel fuel up there, which I have no idea what that is, but it's probably not a small amount. We can replace that 100% with three turbines. And it just is, I look forward to being able to meet that challenge. But just the that's just one community in BC. So how many others, including Coast Guard, including Parks Canada, et cetera, that are using diesel, and how much? So it's, even if we just, if we can just get a fair share of the BC marketplace, I think we'll be contributing a lot to our global warming problem. Just the elimination of that kind of that volume of diesel consumption.
Absolutely. Not to mention the logistics of getting the diesel there, and it's a great story. There's some pathway to go. What challenges are you guys expecting on the development of that pathway, and how do you foresee overcoming those?
Well, we're at the point now where we need a location to prove out the concept. There's a requirement to reach a technical readiness level 9. What that means is that you've had a device in the water for a period of time, you've monitored its operation, you can demonstrate that it actually works. That's part of it. There's also an international electrotechnical committee that puts out standards for devices with the Canadian Standards Association. And before we can even talk to anybody, we've got to, you know, get our certification. So that's the first part, proof of concept. And in order to do that, we really need 90 days. We need 30 days to produce a device, and we need to operate it for 30 days. So fortunately, through COAST, through your organization, Jason, we hope to have an opportunity to set up that proof of concept. Now, learning from the First Nations, there's a process called witnessing. And so if we presume there's 65 First Nations on the coast of British Columbia, 14 tribal units. I've worked in every one of them. They're all different. Every one of them's different. They're different contexts. There's different history. But what we're looking at doing is, if you think about a third of the communities are in a tough situation where they're focused on social assistance and the maintenance of their communities. So they don't have the ability right now to work with us. Another third would like to work with us, but they don't have the capacity. So that leaves a third, which is about 21 and a half communities that are ready and interested. So I've spoken to them all. And we have a number of communities that have expressed interest. Now, you can't expect us, and that's part of the conversation I had to make with Dorn and his other core co-founder, Andy Krawchuk, was that, you know, you're not just dropping a device in the ocean and asking for a check. We've got to look at this holistically. So we're looking at hydrogen development. We're looking at providing what's called energy as a service. So we're quite prepared to work with the nation. We're going to focus on nations first, because they're in the best position these days, politically and from a geographic point of view, to work with us. So we're going to invite them into the process with us in our proof of concept, as well as other industrial, commercial, and institutional users. So industrial-wise, we have several brownfield sites that were former pulp and paper mills. We have companies that are working on those sites. They're interested in the energy. We have commercial operations, whether they're resorts or other types of operations. And by institutional, we mean local government, we mean First Nation government, we mean senior governments that are also interested in this. And we had one industrial prospective partner who said, that looks really good on paper, but can you make it this big? And I'm holding my hands up. And he meant to fit into a pipe that's 24 inches in diameter. And Dorn, of course, can't say no. So, you know, we can make them small too. And if you think about sewage treatment plants or water treatment plants, there's an opportunity for swordfish there to power the operation, which takes it out of the calculation. So, you know, until we actually get them in the water and we have expressions of interest from another, a few industrial, commercial, and industrial operators, you know, it remains to be seen. But we're not out selling stock. This is not a stock opportunity. The company has developed private partners, and, you know, we're looking at keeping this a private company and moving it forward. I can also tell you that in the First Nation context, there is a movement afoot to establish their own education authorities, basically school boards. We also have the only First Nation Health Authority in Canada as a First Nation Health Authority for BC. So what's to say, you know, I've done referendums for communities, and I know that, you know, in 90 days we can do community engagement and help nations develop their own power authorities. In fact, one was just created with 14 nations up in the North Coast. It was announced 3 weeks ago. So, like, things are happening quickly.
So how do you see, speaking to First Nations,
yeah.
I mean, you talk about working with them closely. What do you see the major advantages? Obviously, we talked about, you know, powering communities and removing from diesel, but what does Swordfish as a company bring those First Nation groups?
Well, it's not just the power. Energy equals sovereignty as far as a nation is concerned. If they control their own energy, they control their future. And there's no reason why, you know, their economic development or commercial development opportunities should be limited. And so we're interested in bringing in third parties. Like when you buy a computer, you have peripherals, you buy a printer, you buy a headset. We want to package other users to come in with us for each community. And we think that each one's going to be independent, and they're all going to be different. So their histories are different. And I know with Kwakwaka'wakw up north of Quadra, they have their origin stories of the Seathwith, which is a sea monster, two-headed monster. And, you know, coincidentally, our device looks, it's got two heads. Same with the Musqueam, Tsleil-Waututh, and the Squamish Nations. They have origin stories about sea monsters. So, you know, it sounds a bit trite, but I know, having talked to the communities that have expressed interest with us, as they look at their economic transition, and we seem to be in perpetual economic development transition in British Columbia, but this gives them an option that they didn't have before. If they want to discount their power or write deals for production or manufacturing industries, then they can do that without having to ask anybody's permission. And I think that's why that's a big element for coastal First Nations.
So just hearing the stories, we got the technology development, we got the partnerships being built. In the end, Swordfish is a power generation company. You're there to generate power. What separates you from other power generation companies that have come and gone before and maybe succeeded or failed? What's the one thing that Swordfish has?
Well, lessons will be repeated until learned. So when we talk about energy as a service, we're talking about the ability that we can put in a Swordfish generator and power a nation of 300 members with 70 residences right up to the smart meter at their house. We can do it on their on behalf of the nation leadership and administration, or we can provide a unit and teach their people how to operate it, include it on our observation and global grid and include that. Or we can just provide them the units and they could do it themselves. Plus being integrated. And I think integration is a real part of what, like, Coast is bringing to this conversation. And, that's something where you would have, we have communities that are committed to biodiesel, solar, and wind, and maybe they want to add marine tidal to the element and bring it all together so that they don't have any kind of dependency or risk in terms of their future. So there's also training. We've already been approached by a number of organizations that want to train the operators. It is a trade. It's an electrical trade. We have a First Nation owned and operated company that's going to be developing kind of the Institute for Marine Tidal Energy, which is for training purposes. It's not a research. We've got a lot of research on the coast, and we've got facilitation and accelerators. This is purely training people and it will be indigenous owned and operated. So we're willing to work with people and license people to get this done, because once we've demonstrated this in Canada, we have expressions of interest globally. Africa through US aid, Japan aid, German aid. We have South American clients. And then there's the South Pacific communities that are literally drowning by sea rise. And they need a way to attack their issues in terms of climate change as well. And we think we can be a part of that.
So, as a closing, we're almost up on time. Map out the next 2 years for Swordfish Energy. Either Dawn, Patrick, either or. What does the next two years look like?
I think I'm going to defer to Patrick on that, because it'll take me 20 minutes.
You don't have 20 minutes.
Yeah. We see it in two parts. First part is proof of concept. We're working with the European Marine Center in Orkney, along with UVic and University of Manitoba and the University of Strathclyde. And we now have a certification agent that will get us certified. We got to get that done in the next 6 months. After that, we get a few deployments under our belt. And I think once a community sees what we're doing and we have the endorsements of smaller nations, I mean, keep in mind the BC Hydro call for power is for over 30 megabytes. And I think for communities, we're looking at 75 watts, maybe a meg, maybe 2 megs. So it's not going to help the communities, we think, in the way that we can help them. So it's going to be driven by awareness. And I had one chief and an elder tell me, if I have to find your website before you talk to me, I'm not going to work with you. So we have to talk to everybody. And we've adopted indigenous processes where we invite people to witness. And they will participate. And, you know, if we have a failure, we have a failure. But we will do it in public and we will fix it in public. We're not afraid of that.
So best way to learn.
Yeah, I think so. And also, that's our integrity. That's our reputation. So in 2 years, my expectation is to have a minimum of 20 units operating on the coast in British Columbia.
And as you mentioned before, and the part that I really stand by and like that is it's rooted in that community side of things. And that's where I think this transition has to occur is through the communities. Dawn and Patrick, thank you very much. It's been wonderful learning a little bit more about Swordfish Energy and your approach moving forward. And I wish you the best of luck. And Coast is here to support companies like you and others in this endeavor.
Thank you very much. I appreciate being here. Thank you.
Appreciate your time. And thanks for our listeners for joining us on Coast Talks. If you'd like to learn more about our work, visit our website at canadacoast.ca or follow us on social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. Bye for now.